Okay, I'm going to call to order this Wednesday, February 1st, 2017 meeting of the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Welcome back, friends, or welcome. We will be going through, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourselves and do some preparatory things. But before we do anything, I want to have us address the have an organizational meeting to address our adoption of committee rules. So let me do that. I'm going to open an organizational meeting, and Beth, we have rules. Why don't we get a motion first, and then we'll discuss them.
Chair Demereaux, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated 2-1-17.
Okay, Senator Olson has moved to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1st, 2017. Beth, is there anything? These are the same rules that all the committees are operating
they
under,
are.
Right?
They are.
No yeah. changes.
Okay. Anybody want to change the rules? No. Is there anybody have any questions about the rules? If you've been into a committee already today, you're probably familiar with them.
This is
Senator Brzezinski.
This is number three, so I think I've got it down there.
My first one.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is my third.
Read them all.
No. Oh. Senator Roblin, do you have any questions?
No, nope, I'm good.
You want to read them all?
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to our adopting these rules? Okay. So ordered. Those are our rules. Just a couple other housekeeping things while we're kind of thinking of rules. Colleagues, as you know, this committee has been scheduled for meeting Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 3 to 5. And I know how excited you've all been at the prospect of the Friday 3 to 5 slot. We have miraculously found the ability. There's a time on Thursday from 1 to 3 that we are all available. And this is going to be kind of out of the ordinary and not really symmetrical that we are proposing a Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I move that we meet on Thursdays from 1 to 3 and trash the Friday 3 to 5.
I second that.
We don't need a second. We got a second.
We didn't even need a first. We didn't need a first.
No, we were talking about whether it was important for us or not. But, it is.
Oh, I already know my booking over there. We're both on the same page of partners in crime on this one.
Yeah.
Let the record show that the committee is in complete agreement about this change.
Amazing.
And so we may hear some complaints from lobbyists and advocates, but
I doubt
too
it.
Bad. you are going to have to find something else to do
Friday
at the end of Friday. So that's one change I wanted to mention. Except for this Friday. I'm sorry, colleagues, because we already had posted this Friday we're getting a report from the Global Warming Commission.
And it's going to be raining and ice and snow outside.
Yeah. Yeah, so who knows, frankly. But, yeah. But at the moment, we're scheduled to meet on Friday.
I'll be here.
Great. Just, you know, again, on the sort of business side of things, I want to mention my, you know, the usual way that I like to run a committee is I'll rarely schedule a work session on the same day as a public hearing, unless it's, you know, really routine and, you know, something that is clearly non-controversial. But generally, I want to give people a couple of days to mull over and see if any amendments are necessary. And then finally, with respect to amendments, the rules that we just adopted say that we have to any proposed amendments need to be posted at least 1 hour before we take action on them. My preference would be to have them to you well ahead of time. You know, at least 24 hours ahead of time. And I'd ask the same of you if you have amendments that you want to propose, get them to me in advance so I can get them out to the rest of the committee in advance so we can have time to really mull them over. So with that, I know in the organizational meeting it has us introduce ourselves, but before we do that, because we have a guest here who's waiting patiently to testify, I want to jump to the public hearing on Senate Bill 383.
Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, could you just discuss what your actions will be in case of disruption, since we've discussed that in other committees?
Yeah, if you know, the standard operating procedure will be, if there is any disruption in a committee hearing, I will try to quell that disruption, and if it seems clear that's not going to be possible, I'll recess the committee until that disturbance can be dealt with, and then hopefully it will be dealt with dispatch, and then we'll be able to resume.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 383, and Beth, tell us what this does, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 383 would appropriate $1.5 million to the Department of Environmental Quality to award grants for the purpose of developing and administering loan programs for residential or small businesses on site septic system repair or replacement. It would declare an emergency and be effective upon passage. There's no revenue impact. The fiscal impact statement has not been prepared yet.
Okay. Thank you very much, Beth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a bill that, or a concept that's familiar to many of us, came to this committee last time. Let's hear what's being proposed. Senator Roblin, are you leading off?
Yeah, I can. Sure. Okay. As many people in this
excuse
committee.
Excuse me, please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, name is Arnie Roblin, Senator from Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. Last session, we passed a bill that allowed us to form an org and then bid out to an organization the ability to loan at low interest loans to people who needed to replace their septic systems. Worked on that for a couple of sessions, and I thank Senator Olson because he got involved in the second session, and we worked pretty diligently to try to get to a place where it would happen. We put $250,000 in, knowing that probably 1,600 septic systems a year fail. We knew that was not enough to do the whole job. But the goal is that as the loans come back and we get more money into the system, we eventually get to enough money that it can be rotating and we won't have to continue to feed it. But the $250,000 that we put into it was tripled by work from Craft 3, and you'll hear about them a little bit later, so that more money was available. And work was done fairly expeditiously. We weren't sure it was going to get done in time. It did. The bids went out. All of that stuff happened. And they can talk to you a little bit more about that. What we're coming back to is to start feeding that system. And so we're asking for $1.5 million, not a lot. Again, my hope is that outside groups will continue to think of this as a really good way to improve the environment and put some more money into the system. Though that's not something in this bill, it's our expectation that the people running the program can find some of those resources so that more systems can get fixed. And we know that systems can be expensive depending on where you are. There are places in our state where the water table is the same height as the ground, and it's difficult to have a working septic system when that happens. About 30% of the homes in our state have septic systems. And the reason that I got involved, and I'll let my other good colleague explain why he's more involved, is that my coastal lakes are almost all having a problem right now with blue-green algae and other kinds of issues. And this is one of the factors. There are other factors that are contributing to that, but we know that septic systems around the lakes, because most of those lakes have a lot of housing that is developed around that lake, and they all have septic systems. And there are places in my district around the lakes where the structure that the people are living in is worth less than the septic system they have to put in. So it's trying to figure out how do we help those people who don't want to be adding problems to their lake, to fix their system. So that's kind of where it's at and what we're trying to do with this bill. We know this is not the best economy, the best budget cycle, but we really believe that we have to keep it in front of people and we keep moving this forward if we're going to get any place in the near future. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you. Rep. McClain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and senators. My name is Representative Mike McClain. I represent District 55, which is a large rural area, including five counties. And I want to thank Senator Roblin for bringing this bill in the Senate. I join him in his advocacy. It does great assistance to our constituents. I represent specifically the Lapine area in northern Klamath County, the combination of which are to the headwaters of the Deschutes, and there is a significant nitrate penetration system problem by which remediating these septic systems alleviates, and the cost of that remediation is more than a lot of folks are able to bear. And this program, and I want to commend CRAFT 3 with their efforts, has assisted my folks in getting systems in. It's good for the environment. It helps raise the property values in the area. It solves all sorts of problems. So we just need to prime this pump and continue. So I would urge the committee to move this bill to Ways and Means. I assume it has to go there where we can factor it in our other priorities. But many thanks to Senator Roblin and his efforts, and of course commend CRAFT 3 for proving out a model that I think can be emulated elsewhere. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
I don't have to be too close. I'm not used to this. Hi, everybody. I'm Adam Zimmerman. I'm CEO and president of CRAFT 3. Thank you, both Senator Roblin and Representative McClain, for having us here. And thanks, Senator Denbrough and Vice Chair Olson. I think I got that all right. So we've submitted some written testimony, and you get it through the ways that you get it. I'm not sure, but it was on file. I have a couple points to add. Obviously, I want to speak in support of 383, Senate Bill 383. It would allocate an additional $1.5 million to the DEQ to grow this fund. My nonprofit, CRAFT 3, we have offices, I should say, in Astoria, Bend, Portland, and are looking at we're down to Klamath Falls in Medford right now this year. That will be our next office location. We worked with DEQ over the summer to respond to an RFP to run the program. We were successfully awarded it. The award was for $200,000, and we began almost immediately offering what we call our clean water loan product, which is a euphemism, but sometimes easier to say than septic loan. And it covers replacing failing systems. The product is built to barely cover its own costs, and it does. And it allows people who have varying credit quality to get access to a loan, which I think is the important piece. The terms and rates are unique within the marketplace. The loan payments are fully deferred to low-income individuals and borrowers with credit issues. And unlike traditional financial institutions, challenge credits are not forced to pay higher rates. The program features require patient cheap capital for us to use and provide the service to our customers. We're a nonprofit, so we've leveraged the money with some private capital, Meyer Memorial Trust, and Laird Norton Family Foundation were the first in to the tune of $350,000 in 2016. Through our partnership with DEQ, almost immediately doubled the equity involved in the fund. And then we agreed to match that with an additional one-to-one of our borrowing, and we borrow from a bunch of different sources to raise money. In our view, the additional capital would have not come without your investment. In fact, we had that conversation with Meyer Memorial Trust early on, and they very much wanted the state to be a partner in this. So we are 4 months in. We've approved 11 loans, $250,000 in new loans outstanding. That's over eight counties. Obviously, that's not a huge amount, but we feel pretty good that folks in that many places found us and found a way to borrow. Since our last data pull, I'm told 12 days ago, we've added four more applicants in four more counties. So the word is getting out, which is great. It's also a little bit scary given the amount of resource, even if it's essentially $1 million. That doesn't go very far when we're talking about, as Senator Roblin mentioned, 1,600 failures a year. A third of the loans that we've made so far, again, a small group, are to low-income families, and that's below 80% of AMI. As we ramp up, we're expecting demand to be about 150 families a year on that figure of roughly 1,600 failures a year. Obviously, the capital that we've set aside so far won't meet that need, so we're going to need to grow the fund. Our average cost is roughly our average loan size is roughly $15,000. Passing Senate Bill 383 will help address the need by infusing the program with additional capital over the next biennium. If we are able to compete again for additional money through DEQ, we would commit to a one-to-one match, again, raising money from alternative sources. We feel like that's the best way to do this and the best way to maintain a growing fund. So with that, I'd just like to thank these two gentlemen for speaking out in support of this. And we do have a quote from one of our borrowers in Lapine that I just read this morning, which is nice. And they said, if it were not for Craft 3's assistance, we would have had to pay a much higher interest rate for a personal loan. The Clean Water Loan Program is a wonderful program for people like me who are on a fixed income and saves residents time and headaches seeking alternative loan options from seeking alternative loan options at much higher costs. So with that, thank you. And if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Adam. And thank you, Senator Representative, for bringing this. Before I open it up to questions, I do have a question for you, Adam. How are you getting the word out into the field about this this resource?
So the sales force for this are contractors, right? So primarily small rural contractors that are in the field. We've connected with the county. As you all know, in Oregon, we have a diversity of regulatory regimes based on county. Some are DEQ, some are county-based that are governing this. So we've connected with them. They know all the contractors. We provide them with information, and then we ask them to put us in touch with the contractors, and then we start a relationship. And after a while, once the contractors understand that we're familiar with this type of work, then they get a lot more comfortable sort of referring people to us. So it takes a little bit of time.
Great, thanks. Colleagues, questions? Yes, Vice Chair Olson.
I like this program, so don't think bad of me, but I'm going to bust your chops. I've got a document here that was put out by DEQ, and DEQ said that, and this is from, I assume from your material, it said that you did 682 septic systems from 2003 to 2016 in Washington for a cost of $14.9 million, and that equates to $21,847.51 a septic system. I'm in the industry. That seems to be a tad on the high side. So my question to you is, when you make these loans, are they allowed to get a little extra money to do maybe something else? Or is this specifically for the system?
So we do include, so there's, I'll share this with everybody else. You know this. There's an operations and maintenance piece of this. So you install the system, and then if you don't maintain it, it breaks. and then we have problems. So all the loans include an O&M piece that we hold back, and then when the system is ready to be maintained, we hear, they give us the heads up, and we release that money to pay the O&M. So that's part of it. The other part I would say is that we're doing systems on in places like Vashon Island, which is essentially a rock with a little bit of dirt on top of it, and that jacks the price up a lot. It's a lot different from doing it in the middle of Kitsap County, where it's just clay. So it varies. And, you know, the difference between doing something on a steep slope outside a 10-mile lake is going to be different from, you know, doing something in Lapine that's easy to get to. So,
I fully understand that. Follow up. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I fully understand that. And if you're using sand filter systems, is this why you put in the O&M part of it for the sand filter system? Because they have to be examined once a year.
So the in our experience, the counties are the ones who, at least in Washington, and again, we're only 11 systems into doing this in Oregon,
right.
So it varies. In Washington, our experience has been the counties put the systems on whatever O&M track they need to be for whatever design it is. And I'm not going to speak to, you probably know more about the technical piece than I do. I will say that the O&M piece is really important, and we put that in from the beginning. And I would hate to see that go away.
Actually, can I ask a question about that? So you said that the average cost in Oregon has been, or the loan size has been around $15,000. So does that coincide with the cost of the project? Does that include O&M here in Oregon as well?
It does. And, you know, we try to be somewhat agnostic when we do these projects with regard to the homeowner selecting their contractor and doing the design, and whatever is being asked from by the regulatory body, whether that be the county or DEQ. We don't really try to second guess the contractor and the homeowner, both because we're not the technical experts, and you know, in the end, it's their money. The homeowner's taking the loan, so as much as we can, we try to go off of whatever the regulatory agency in place is recommending and what the contractor thinks is best. And we try not to, unless we do have issues, again, when it comes to, again, a very difficult to serve location where it's a $75,000 project, and we will ask questions like what's going on.
Well, I was going to, you just mentioned, and I just looked at your numbers on the letter there. It was, and I'm only doing this because it clarifies things for me. $257,233 for 11 loans. That's $23,384 per loan. When a client comes to you, you're telling me they already have a septic tank installer involved, and they give you a bid, and then you accept the bid, and away they go, and you don't really care if it's high bid, low bid, or any bid in between. You go by what the homeowner wants to do, as long as the homeowner can afford it.
So historically, we've had different bids come in, and it's a tricky situation in terms of, again, us telling them what's right for their property. We do try to... And that's one of the values that we bring, because we just do this. We don't do – it's not like a home equity line where it could be anything. So we just do this. So we have quite a bit of knowledge. So our team in the field tries to be, I would say, coaching without telling people what to do around price, and suggesting that they get different bids. But, no, we wouldn't necessarily require it.
I'm glad you said that, because there are some people, if they know that you're out there and you're – freely and willingly giving these loans, could, you know, pad it a little bit, and that would concern me, because then we couldn't take this program as far as it should go.
Right.
But as long as your people are out there in the field saying, oh, by the way, this one really looks kind of maybe a little bit on the high side, is there someone else you can go to? I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you for your honesty.
Sure.
Senator.
Senator Arne Roblin again. I just want to follow up because one of the issues that Senator Olson brought up the last time was if you don't take care of them, they don't last very long. And just getting them pumped on a regular basis and that kind of stuff. So I was really pleased to recognize that they were putting OMN into the beginning because it forces people to realize you just don't keep flushing the toilet and expecting it to go away. You've got to take care of it because if you take care of it, they can last for a long, long time. If you don't take care of it, they don't last very long at all. So that was one of the conversations we had last time about, you know, don't just give them a loan and build it. If they don't know how to take care of it, we're in trouble.
And, Mr. Chair, in Representative McLean's case down in Lapine where they have the high water table and the bad soils, the sand filter system is the way to go, and it needs to be inspected yearly because it is a very intricate system, if you didn't know that.
Excuse me, where am I?
Exactly.
Mr. Chair.
He was asking you about your septic system.
But we're not going there.
Yes, Senator Bretschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Out of the appropriations from the state to this program, how much of that is administrative? What percentage of those funds go to administration?
Right now, the way this one's set up, we're asking for 1.5 and 200,000 of it would go to O&M and doing the work here. When it goes to them, I don't know if they use any administrative costs other than as they get back the interest and so on and pay back the loan. But from the state's perspective, 1.5, they get 1.3 will be given out for bids so they can actually use it. 200,000 will be used for O&M, the costs for managing the
for
program
DEQ?
Right now. And last time it was 250,000 and 50,000 of that was left for DEQ to get. So they had to write the stuff. That's what it was. If they don't spend it all, I would really appreciate that, but that's what we put into the bill.
And just to follow up, so that 50,000 was for rulemaking, for setting up?
The last one was it was a lot of work to do. They had to go out to bid for other organizations and other kinds of things as well. We, in putting this bill together, came up with a similar kind of an arrangement. They agreed that they would do it for less than that. Anything that was less could go back into the program, and I do believe they did not spend the full 50,000 last time.
If I can add, I mean, at this point, the program is set up by and large. The lending capacity, if we were to bid and bid successfully, we might ask for a minimal, I would say, maybe 25 grand for marketing purposes, just to make sure that we got out there in the very other counties that were interested knew. But most of it would go to loan capital from my perspective. And then our big challenge is we have to be able to leverage the money. So as soon as that money hits our balance sheet, then we can go out and borrow against it. So I want to keep most of it as capital.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sure.
As far as the marketing goes, you said you go out specifically to like septic tank installers or things like that. Do you do anything like in Representative McLean's area? Do you do anything like a small snippet in the newspaper saying you've got problems? Because you have tremendous problems down there. Do you ever do a small snippet or go to like a Familian plumbing store and put flyers in there? Do you any? Because your reach needs to start growing.
So we would. We don't have a whole lot of resource to go around the state right now, so I'm a little bit reticent to hit the gas. Allies in this program, both from an outreach perspective as well as from the perspective of what we're doing right here, tend to be the contractors and the counties. But at size, absolutely. I mean, we do a variety of things in Washington as the program has grown with regard to advertising, and a lot of it has to do with social media. We do a newsletter. We do some pretty interesting stuff, and that program has grown substantially in the last 8 months, in part because we've received substantially more resources from the state and hit the gas, and so demand is starting to spike, which is good.
Maybe Representative McLean can talk about it at town hall.
I would love that.
Because, never mind, I won't go down that road.
I do have an occasional comment that I should keep my boots on while I'm speaking. I don't know why they say that.
But I would like to commend Senator Roblin for putting this program together because it is important that we make certain that these systems work, We had difficulty the first year because we didn't want to overburden people, but now the thing is going, and we can start making these repairs we really need to do.
And I'll add to that, I really appreciate that you're able to offer the program with reasonable interest rates, right, for people who are credit
challenged. We think it is. There's Guido in the back
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And actually, it leads to a question. I don't remember if this came up when in the previous session, but how has your repayment rate been, you know, when you've been offering this similar program up in Washington State? You know, you're dealing with credit-challenged people. Have they been, you know, have they been reliable customers?
So these are essentially home loans. So our losses spiked during the recession. They've come back down. I think our historic loss rate is, I want to say 6. It's between 5 and 10, and it varies a little bit. So we will lose some of these credits. I mean, that's inevitable, and that's part of the need for subsidy, and it's also a result of extending credit to folks who may struggle a little bit with their credit history. But pretty good, given, you know, loss rates on credit cards are much higher than that. We do take, and this is getting a little bit into the weeds, but we do take what's called a UCC on the home. So this is not it's not a mortgage, and we take a lot of pride in that because people want to do other things in some cases with their home equity, or they don't have any. So this is not a mortgage, but it functionally, in the case of a home liquidation or default, it functions as a thumbprint on the title. So we do have some negotiating capacity, and we've gotten a little bit of money out of worst-case scenarios. And we have staff devoted to that. So it tends to work out. You'd be surprised how many people prioritize this in their monthly bills. They take it very seriously, and they take the ability to have gotten a loan like this is somewhat of a gift, especially those who are in lower income situations. So yeah, the performance is better than you might expect.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
I remember Senator Roblin, when we first discussed this, my concern was pushback on what kind of septic system. Has the county done anything, or DEQ done anything, to push back and say, no, the standard system works, but we want you to upgrade because it would be much better to do a more expensive system? Have you seen any of that?
I have not.
Okay. I just was curious to see, because that was one of my concerns, that they would push back and make them put in a really super expensive system. And if they're letting them go just for replacement, that's cool. That's good.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we have this scheduled for a work session on Monday. You do have additional testimony from the League of Women Voters, is on OLIS, in support of this. And
thank you.
But if anything
thank
comes
you.
Up, if you have any questions or
thank
concerns,
you
please let me know.
Yes, thank you.
Always amazing what we talk about.
I could get a new car. Can I squeeze it?
Thank you.
Oh, you
she
can give it to her and
she
the
can,
sorry
can
about that.
Thank you, Adam. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 383. I'm actually going to hold an abeyance going back to our introductions of ourselves and move to the work session on Senate Bill 610. Okay, so I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 610. Which is a bill that came to our committee by mistake. It actually should go to Senator Roblin's committee.
Always sending more work to us.
Right. This is an issue that I'm actually personally quite passionate about, youth employment, and I think maybe my name is synonymous with it, so it was sent to my committee, but it really it belongs to Senator Roblin. And so... yes. Oh, we actually have
I'll do it.
Great.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 610 without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to a different committee.
Senator Olson has moved Senate Bill 610 without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to to a different committee. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to this re-referral? It is re-referred. Motion carries. Okay. Let's go back to the organizational meeting, introduction of committee members. And I'll start this off because I want to say a few things just about what's ahead of us in this committee. So I'm Michael Dembro. I'm the senator from District 23, Northeast Southeast Portland. It's interesting that I find myself chairing this committee because when I first moved over to the Senate from the House, I inherited the assignment of my predecessor, Senator Dingfelder. So I chaired this committee for a little over a year back 2013-2014, and really enjoyed it, but moved over to workforce to deal with the issues that we had to deal with last session, was pleased, A, to remain a member of this committee, and B, to see the good work that was done by Chris Edwards as the chair of the committee. I think we owe him a lot, and a lot of the work that we do this session will have been keyed up by Senator Edwards and his work. I want to point, first to his great passion for our working on the problem of climate change and taking action to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions for us as a state. And just, those of you who are on this committee will remember the way that Chair Edwards always grounded that work in his being a father and thinking about the need to, to make this a better world for his children. I'm a grandfather, and so I'm thinking in a very similar way about my grandchildren and hopefully their children and their children. I think that's it's a really important task that we have here in this committee. But, I also appreciated the way that Senator Edwards addressed this issue seeing it as a way that also created good jobs for this state and was a way to, wanted to approach it in a way that could build local economies, everywhere in the state, most particularly in our rural economies. In a way that also addressed the needs of workers and low-income Oregonians, communities of color, everyone who could be affected by this work, both in a positive way and to mitigate any challenges. I'll tell you, there are a number of bills out there that have to do with the issue of climate change. Some have already been submitted, others, here are on the way. So I can promise you that we will have, we'll be paying robust attention to this, both on this side of the building and on the other side of the building. And one of the things I'm trying to figure out is how to coordinate those conversations so that we're all, faced with the same science. We're all faced with the same questions, and we could work on this together, and I'll let you know more about that. So, I will say, of course, there are lots of other issues that we'll be addressing in this committee, I'll have Beth send you the referral list so that you can all see the bills that have been referred to this committee. I know that I'll be paying a lot of attention to that intersection of environmental health and public health. whether we're talking about air quality and the impact of diesel and other air toxins, the impact of residential demolitions with respect to lead. Toxins in our schools are also something that we'll be paying attention to. We'll be looking at some water, a lot of water issues, water quality issues, as well as water quantity issues. All sorts of natural resource issues, of course, including some legacy issues that we had thought or had hoped had gone away, but that Senator Dingfelder gave to me a couple of years ago, and I thought we had dealt with those, but here we are again. We'll be talking about suction dredge mining, for example, next week. I'm expecting some bills related to Columbia River fisheries, and so there'll be some really tough issues out there. I think we are the repository of all sorts of animal bills. Fortunately, the state mascot for a number of species is going to another committee, so we don't have to deal with that. But we have a couple of veterinary bills and other animal bills that we'll be dealing with. We have a number of land use bills as well that we'll be dealing with. What I would really appreciate from you colleagues is once you get the bill referral list to go through, and if there are issues on the list that you really want us to be sure to pay attention to, please get in touch with me or Vice Chair Olson, and you know, let us know. We'll be meeting regularly to work on the agenda. With that, I'm very excited about the work of this committee. I think the fact that we're meeting 3 days a week. You know, I had originally, my thought originally when it seemed like that third day was going to be Friday 3 to 5 was that we would use that time just for informational hearings because there are so many programs out there that, you know, we really need to hear about, but maybe not every member was going to be able to attend at the end of Friday, at the end of the week. But now that we're meeting, our third meeting will be Thursday, I think I'll probably be blending informational hearings with public hearings and work sessions on bills. So I'm pretty excited about that. So with that, I'll have the other members introduce themselves. But before they do that, I want to introduce our committee administrator. We are in the very capable hands of Beth Petrino. Say something about yourself.
Say something about myself. Let's see. I was trying to remember the last time I was in the Senate, and I can't remember. So it's been a little while, but I'm glad to be back. And please let me know if there's anything I can do to help you in your work. I'm happy to do what I can.
We had to trade 3 pages and 2 representatives to get you
to
back.
To get me back. That's right. That's pretty
yes.
good.
But we did love Beth Riley as well.
You did love Beth Riley.
Yeah,
right.
So. Senator Berchiger?
Berchiger, Senator, District 2, which is Southern Oregon, most of Josephine County, and northern part of Jackson County.
Senator Arnie Roblin, I have a fairly long district. It goes from, and parts of 7 counties, Coos Bay, actually it's Charleston, the bridge is where I start, in the south, and I go to the whole west side of Tillamook Bay. And then I go inland to parts of Douglas County and Lane County. Territorial Road is where I go up to in Lane County. And then come in and take all of Lincoln County, half of Tillamook County, parts of Polk and Yamhill counties, Sheridan and Falls City. So in a couple places I have to go out of my district to get to my district because I don't have Willamina, which is between the road. But 4 of the 9 Oregon tribes are located in my district, and that's kind of a unique part of what we do within that district. But love being here. From the beginning of my tenure in the legislature, I have been on natural resource committees except last term. So I'm happy to be back at natural resources. The when I was in the minority, they put me on natural resources. They always think that if we're in the rural, we should probably be on natural resources, which I appreciated. And then I got to come over here, and they made a special committee on rural Oregon for the first while, and then now I'm back in education. For both of us, that's right. We were both on that committee.
And they got rid of it, didn't they?
Yes, they did. I'm sad about that.
So they had to find a place for you.
That's right. They put me in education, told me to sit quietly and work hard. So that's kind of nice. And I'm happy here.
Yeah, it's great having you back, Senator.
Yeah.
I'm Alan Olson. My district is Senate District 20. Runs from Charbonneau to Estacada, from Happy Valley, 224, 212, south to Molino. So it's a pretty big district. Not as big as Arnie's, but or Herman's, or probably... Floyd's, but it's a big district. I've been the vice chair of natural resources for 6 years, been through four different agency or chairs, I should say, and Michael's coming back for his second shot at me, and I probably will be here after he leaves again. But hopefully one day I'll move over and get that gavel.
Okay.
So I'm Floyd Przonski, Senate District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. If I have this correct, geographic landmass-wise, it is the largest county west of the Cascades. A lot of trees, few people, but actually equal numbers for all of us, just more landmass. I have had the opportunity since coming to the Senate in 2003 and starting really the work in 2004 to be on either environment and natural resources, or when we did have the rural communities and natural resources broke off, went over there, and then... I think it was wise probably to get them all back together just because of the topics that we do deal with. They were so interlocked, interchanged, and so I think this is a good mix of members with those experiences. And I'm looking forward for us to continue our work. I think the issues that we have on the climate change need to continue to be looked at the state level to try to help facilitate what needs to happen on the federal level. And so I expect that we'll have some of that. And all I can say is Representative Olson is very hard on those chairs. They don't last too long here.
No.
So good luck. Have your vitamins and tiger milk.
Yes, thank you for that advice. Yeah, I will say, I am impressed at the sort of mix, geographical mix of this committee. We have, we have rural, we have urban, we have suburban, we have coastal. Herman, do you have east of the Cascades?
No.
You're all west.
No.
Okay,
no,
so we don't have east county, east of the state, but...
I got the mining district.
We'll go up to the mining.
That's true.
Yeah.
All towards border, what would be the east side up to the Cascades,
okay.
Both Douglas and Lane and Josephine.
Except yours doesn't border anything but another Gresham and...
Yes, mine is geographically the smallest. Yes, I can bicycle from one side of my district to the other and probably in a half hour. If I want to drive, though, it's another story.
But, Mr. Chair, you say you have northeast Portland and southeast Portland. What happened to east Portland?
Oh, it is east Portland.
Do you just kind of go around it or jump
well,
over
Well, east
it?
Is north and south.
Oh.
And yeah. I do have... 3 miles out into the ocean. So I try to compete with the size of Senator Przonski's, but we finally figured out he still wins. The mountains take up more air than my 3 miles. So,
yeah.
It's pretty impressive, actually, his size.
Anyway, I'm sure I'm speaking for everyone here that we will continue to remember east of the Cascades this session, even though none of
Trust
us represent
me,
that area.
Senator Whitsitt has my cell phone number. I'm sure I will.
And he's probably watching us right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So today is a light day, colleagues. I wanted to start that way. We have no committee bills, but we will have a standing place on each agenda for possible introduction of committee bills. So if you have any that you'd like to have introduced, please let me know. Remember, we are meeting on Friday, that just for this week, weather permitting. It's perhaps ironic that we'll be hearing about the Global Warming Commission when we may be dealing with snow, but that is the nature of climate change, apparently. So Colleagues, with that, we are adjourned.
Thanks.
With that, we are adjourned.